Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and macabre murders from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 65. 65.
Hurrah for 65.
Hooray for continuing to do episodes and counting every single week in wonderment.
We are getting good.
We are getting good. It's a thing that we do every week and we can't stop now.
Can't stop it now. No, it's become habit. We would not know what to do otherwise.
Indeed. How are you, Nick?
I'm all right.
You all right?
I'm all right. Can't complain.
It's
all good. Bumbling on. How are you? Are you well?
Oh, this is one of the rare occasions where you've ever asked me back.
Very rare, very rare. I thought we've hit the 60s, it's about time.
I'm fine.
Bored now.
Sometimes I feel things, Nick. No, okay.
No, we don't do that.
I'm very well. I was at work. I had a networking session. It involved beer tasting. Virtual beer tasting.
Virtual beer tasting. I'm imagining that you were tasting virtual beer.
Yes.
You were going, oh, I can imagine the hops.
It was a networking session of mimes, and we were just all fake tasting beer going, this is the same. No, we got a little package delivered, so I was able to taste some beer from a very good brewery.
Sounds like some fancy marketing nonsense to me.
Yeah, it's great. Why do you think I work in this industry? Though I will say, I did have the opportunity to try something you tried recently. I don't know if it was on main episode. I think it might have been on Patreon.
Yeah.
This marketed hard seltzer business. That is a thing that is evil and needs to die in a pit.
Entirely unnecessary.
What is that about?
I have no idea. It's just that it's sparkly water. Make it boozy. No.
It's just water and vodka, though. It's not even good booze.
It's
awful. Does anyone else out there like hard seltzer? Are we missing something? I don't think we are. If you like it, we don't like you.
That's a slightly dramatic approach, possibly, but a valid one I stick with.
Yeah. Indeed. Any poisonings this week? Hard seltzer related or not?
Hard seltzer related. No. I mean, anyone who I see with a hard seltzer is going to get poisoned.
Do you knock it out of their hand or do you just let it happen?
No, I have a handy stash of strychnine in my bag that I will surreptitiously dose a hard seltzer if I see one.
Not a court in the land would convict you.
Absolutely not. They'll go, well done, sir. Well done. You did the right thing.
But other than that, hard seltzer related, it's all been fine.
I believe so. Yes, indeed.
The world is at peace. Hooray. Well, speaking of poisoning people in the street and striking drinks out of people's hands, I think it's time for us to thank our lovely Patreon subscribers.
Because they would never do that. They would never strike someone's drink out of a hand.
And they wouldn't touch a hard seltzer, would they? Would they?
Quite right. So thank you so much to Alexandra Phipps.
To Jade Ariel Clark.
To the Pink Witch. We love you because I love your name.
And to Tash.
Excellent.
Thank you so much, you delicious, lovely new subscribers. You're very, very sexy.
Hope you're enjoying all the exciting ramblings that there are on Patreon. There are many of them.
There are many and they're wonderful. I delved into our first gunslinger story this week.
Oh, you did. It was very exciting.
You did. You dipped your toe into the old west.
In the old west.
Which is a misnomer because the old west actually involved a lot of the east in that story as well. You just kind of go, it's all old and kind of vaguely westy.
It's sort of centrally, really, isn't it?
Florida.
There was a bit of Florida, but there's a lot of Texas. It was mainly Texas-based.
Texas. Yeah, okay, fair enough. South. The old South. Which is a godless place, as we know.
It's all very complicated.
Well, Nick.
Yes?
Are you ready?
No.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison?
Or
we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
Let's have a cocktail, I think.
Yay! Cocktails. I am so ready for a cocktail this week.
When are you ever not ready for a cocktail, dear?
I've had one of my famous weeks of not drinking for 2 days, so now I'm just...
I think famous is pushing it slightly, I have to say.
Among my AA group, it's famous. The police know of it well.
Sinead has not had a drink for 2 days. It is cause for celebration throughout the land.
The authorities know that it's a full moon tonight and Sinead is having a drink. God, bring in reinforcements. Yay. We're going to go with the first one. We're going to have a cocktail. We're going to talk about poison. Hooray. And it is Nick's story this week. Woohoo!
Aren't you lucky?
We are, but we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, every week we pick a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell that will flavour our cocktail of the week. So Nick got to choose our special secret ingredient, and it is, Nick...
And it's very sparkly. It's very lovely.
Mm.
We have some diamonds.
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 How splendid.
I was so excited when you sent me diamonds as a secret ingredient. I just went through all of the diamond songs in my head. Diamonds are forever.
Yep.
Shine bright like a diamond. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Diamond in the hand. That's another one. I don't know.
Right, okay. Well, we've got three so There's far. Three. And one Sinead made up.
There's three Diamond songs, and that's the end of this anecdote.
I do believe there's an Aladdin thing going on there.
Diamond in the Rough, is it?
Isn't that a song?
Is that? Wasn't yes, that someone commented on that. Is it? I don't know. There's going to be silence now as we think back to the Disney film. Or is it a new one?
No, it's definitely referred to. If it's the name of a song or something, I don't know, but it's definitely the Diamond in the Rough.
Ah, ha, ha. Yeah. Is this anything to do with Aladdin?
Not in the slightest. Yeah, so that was all bollocks, really. So
everyone was probably listening along, shouting at the whatever they're listening to podcasts on, the gramophone.
Yes. Oh, can we release a podcast on vinyl every week? Let's do that. I'm sure that'll go down a treat.
Oh my god, there's got to be a market in it. There's got
like
to be
season,
a market.
Season one on Poisonous Cabinet vinyl.
That's what all the Patreon money will go towards, the extortionate costs of us pressing vinyl every week, delivered to five people, so they can sit in their wingback chairs swilling a brandy or a chocolate milk, whatever it is you want, going, ah, yes, it does sound better on vinyl. Yeah, it's the quality.
It would be like a Patreon tier of about $5,000 a month or something.
People would pay for it.
People would go for it. Well, if there's interest out there, let us know.
Indeed. Imagine the quality of me screeching and Nick drinking every week. Well,
it's a delight.
Diamonds, though. Diamonds, it's so yes, elegant. It's so fancy. Are there diamonds in the drink? I'm fancy and I'm pretty. I deserve nice things.
You're not fancy enough, I feel.
You're not going to do that romantic thing where you drop a diamond ring in the drink and then, oh my God.
No. No, I'm not going to do that.
Killing that idea dead, aren't
you? Yeah, absolutely. No, I think not. Perhaps one day, a lump of coal, maybe one day.
That's what I'm worth to you, isn't it? Even if we were a couple, you'd be like, yeah, you're not worth diamonds, love.
No, perhaps a shiny pebble.
Oh, I'd actually really like a shiny pebble. Yeah. A little crow brain would be going, oh, pebbles, 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 pebbles.
Oh, shiny.
I'm easy to please. Hooray, hooray, hooray. So with diamond then as the inspiration, the ingredient, I wish it was an ingredient, what have you come up with?
Well, see, there are quite a few things out there. And I thought, oh, let's do something diamondy, perhaps some sort of a bubbly thing. Something Ooh, with some fizz oh, yeah, might be good yeah, yeah. for a diamond thing. Someone on the social also mentioned as well, like a really crisp, ice cold martini.
Oh, yes.
Be quite diamondy sort of thing. So it's got that really pale colour and all frosty and
yeah.
lovely. That's got quite a diamondy vibe to it.
I like the way people are thinking out of the box with this and sort of visuals that, you know, the crispness of a cold martini.
But we're not having that either.
Oh,
so.
Oh fuck. Right, okay.
So this week we're having a black diamond.
A black diamond.
A black diamond. As an evil diamond. An evil diamond. For an evil story.
A lot of diamonds are evil, actually, really, by nature. I hope this was a sustainably sourced diamond.
Absolutely.
Black
From
diamond.
My cupboard. Yes.
Oh, it sounds decadent, yet with a twist of evil. Ooh.
I think potentially just evil.
Oh, just evil. Just evil.
Potentially, yes.
Are there black diamonds? Can you get a black diamond in real life?
I don't know if you can get a black diamond in real life. I'm not too sure.
No. That's just a bad diamond.
Yeah, that is just coal, really. Someone's trying to... Because it's made of the same stuff. It's all carbon in the end.
I wonder if anyone's ever done that. Just gone, here is a lump of gold. It's a black diamond. It rubs on my skin. That's the purity of it. It's fresh from the ground where it was grown.
It's exfoliating. It's great.
Chew on it. It's weird.
So yes, so we have one of those to look forward
to. Black diamond. I love the sound of it. Sounds like our cup of tea. Hopefully it damn well better be.
Yeah.
Well, as ever, Nick has delivered me some secret ingredients. So I think without further ado, we need to go to our isolation kitchens and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Oh, Nick, it's another brown.
It's another
drink.
Brown.
It's not exactly black.
I was hoping for a slightly blacker hue, but no, it's definitively brown.
It's positively amber.
Well, yes.
It's very ambery, so I'm intrigued by it. Amber, gold, golden, almost. Mm. A black diamond, though, is it? Mm. I don't think we should drink it until there's blackness in it. Get some Guinness. Okay, no.
Introduce it to your soul.
Well, would you like the knife back or should I leave it in my heart?
No, just leave it there. It's fine. I'll come back for it later.
I have nothing to come back with. Just tears. So a black diamond, it looks very
black
beautiful.
Diamond.
Obviously, we can't discuss what's in it until I've tasted it. So do we have a little sniff first then?
By all means, sniff away.
It smells of booze. I'm getting hints of booze.
Hints of booze.
Hints of booze and... notes of alcohol.
Well, that's it. We don't need to taste it anymore. We've sorted it. But I'm going for it.
Okay, right. Let's dive in and taste it. Merry Christmas.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh, I say. Ooh. That's all I have to say on the matter.
Yes. I feel like you like it.
I do like it. Mm. And much more than I was expecting to.
It's boozy. It's definitely nice. Yeah, hang on a second. Yeah. What are those flavours in there?
What are those flavours?
Oh, I don't know if I can work that out. Can I have a guess at what's in there?
Mm.
Now, okay, full disclosure, you did mention to me that some cacao is in there.
I did, but it's not.
Oh, it's not?
Because that was for an alternative drink that I did not make.
Oh, okay. Well, then I didn't taste any of that. Yeah, all the way through tasting that, I was like, oh yeah, I can so taste the cacao. Yeah, yeah, really getting notes of that. No.
Notes of chocolate. No, you're not. If you are, you're having a stroke or something.
Yeah, exactly, it's a cry for help. Oh, I don't know, I'm thrown.
We have three ingredients.
But three?
Three things in this drink.
Uh-huh.
Come on, you can get one.
Okay, maraschino.
No.
Fuck. Whiskey. Bourbon.
Nope.
Cognac.
Yeah.
Yay! You're really rattling through that bottle of cognac, aren't you?
We've used a lot of it recently, actually. I know. From not being a fan, it's actually come up in a few cocktails that I've quite enjoyed. So
I'm still not that much of a fan yet. Okay, so cognac. I really don't know the rest.
I think you might struggle with the rest of them.
Okay, go for it.
So we have a sweet vermouth. So you may have got that one.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, the colour, which would usually be the dead giveaway, masked slightly by the cognac, and one which I don't think you'll get, but you would notice if it wasn't there. We've got elderflower.
What? Elderflower?
Elderflower. The Saint-Germain elderflower.
Oh, the Saint-Germain. All right. Oh, God. Now you've said it. So, I'm not just making this up, but now smelling it. That's what it is. That's the thing that I couldn't work out.
Would be noticeable with his absence, but his actually is not overpowering, as elderflower can sometimes be.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the elderflower. Mm. I think elderflower is overused in bloody everything. Elderflower cordial, this. No, it's evil. Don't like it. Not a fan for the elderflower, but...
But it makes a damn good cocktail.
I can't taste it in there. It's okay. There's certainly boozy. I'm going to say that the cognac cocktails are... down the middle for me.
Fair enough.
Because I don't think you can really mask the cognac very well.
No, you can't, absolutely.
All the other flavours are doing is just, I can taste the red vermouth, I can, now you said the Saint-Germain, I'm glad I can't taste a lot of that, but it gives a little floral something to it in the background. Absolutely. So clearly a really, really good cocktail and a really good mix. But cognac is just such a powerful flavour. That it's, for me, it's just, it doesn't give enough complexity. I just feel like it's overpowering it.
Fair enough.
There's an intervention, Nick. You need to stop with the cognac cocktail.
Oh, there have been like three.
And it tears me up inside.
Because there were alternatives that we could have had. And one which we so very, 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 very nearly had.
Okay.
Which was called a diamond back.
Well, diamond. Oh, like a snake.
Like a snake.
Yeah. It's poisony.
It would have been great.
Yes.
You would have exploded. Because it has your favourite ingredient.
Chartreuse.
As the yellow chartreuse. So I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be nice to Sinead. I regret it bitterly.
Oh, no, thank you. Well, what else with this yellow chartreuse would have been in there?
So on that one, it was rye whiskey.
Nice.
Calvados. And we had some Calvados left over from previous week. And yellow chartreuse. So another three ingredient cocktail.
I don't feel like I'm missing out on that one.
Didn't think you would enjoy this one.
So the cognac cocktail, it's nice for what it is.
Nice for what it is. Oh, damning with faint praise there, indeed.
I do like it. I'm not going to drink it, and I'm not going to object to drinking it. How do you feel about them? Are you like more into cognac now?
More into them than I usually. I would not drink or have a nice glass of cognac of an evening as a digestif or something.
See, I would.
But I think in a cocktail, like that, where it's mellowed down, I think the sweet vermouth really mellows it and adds an extra layer to it. And I think the elderflower is surprisingly lovely in there. You don't know it's elderflower, but you know there's something in there.
That's a great description, to know something's in there.
And it's not overpowering as elderflower.
No.
But if it wasn't there, you would know something was missing.
You have to taste the notes that are not there. It's like jazz.
Exactly.
You're more of the hard liquor. I say hard liquor, everything's hard liquor. But
I'm more of the short, desperately boozy cocktails.
Yeah.
Yes, those are my preference.
Yeah, that's your forte. That's your happy place. Whereas I would be more inclined to have a cognac or a Calvados or a whiskey. Not bourbon. Bourbon's lovely in cocktails. I'm really into those now. But all the other ones, I'd be more like, yeah, a little digestive, mainly so I can sit in my big chair and swirl the glass and cackle.
I do that anyway, but with a Negroni.
Swilling it all over you. Yeah. His evil schemes are not so subtle. Yes. Well, I think it's a lovely drink. It's a lovely drink. It's another one for the cognac drinkers. Again, tell us, people, what do you think of it? Next week, more fruity, sharp, sour deliciousness from you.
Okay, well, I want a Fruity Shops sour delicious ingredient then from you next
week. Yes, I suppose. What could that be? Apart from limes. I have to find something with limes in it and then you can't escape me.
Bring it on. I've got a... Oh, we haven't had a last word. That's a good limey one.
Oh, that is a good one. That does have chartreuse in it, though.
It does have chartreuse in it.
Well, you have to pull out the big guns. Yes, maybe the ingredients next week will be bitterness.
Oh, Campari. That's another Negroni for me.
How many Negronis have you had, Nick?
Oh, many, many. And I wasn't sure if this cocktail would be good, so I made a jug.
Yeah. Did you actually make a jug of Negronis? He's just shown me it on camera.
A mixing glass.
Yes, there's such a subtle freaking difference, isn't there?
It's not quite a pitcher. It's not quite a... I've got a bucket of Negroni down here.
Two for one on Negroni pitchers, oh my God. Well, with our black diamonds in hand... Is it time for a story, Nick?
Yes, everyone is ready. Are you ready at home? So this week, I've gone back to the beginning with a good old-fashioned poisoning.
Yay!
So I know you've done a few recently, but I realise I haven't actually done a poisoning case since our Borgia Medici face-off at the end of season one. So that must be remedied.
It must be rectified.
So today we have just that with the tale of Anna Marie Han.
Ooh, that's a woman.
Well done, yes.
I'm way ahead of this story.
We start our story in Germany.
Okay.
In 1906. So Anna is the youngest of 12 children.
Jesus.
Yeah, indeed. Big old family going on there. But it is noted that she is an incredibly difficult child and has earned herself, even at a very young age, quite the reputation for stealing. Ooh. And for taking other children's toys when they were better than hers.
Yeah. If you're the youngest of 12, is she just taking her...
And not just her siblings' toys.
No.
But, like, people at school, little kids at school and stuff like that. And just everyone going, no, I like that. Push them over. Steal their toy, steal their doll, and run off cackling.
Youngest child, are you spoiled so you should get the best, or is she suffering from having the hand-me-downs from all the other kids never having anything new, so she wants to take something for her own?
Who knows? I mean, the family is relatively well off. Her father is a cabinet maker.
Millionaire.
It's a skilled and well-paid profession, but nothing is ever good enough for the young Anna. She always wants more, and it doesn't really matter to her how she gets it. At the age of 19, Anna falls pregnant. She claims the father was Dr. Max Matschecki, a Viennese physician who was going to marry her and take her away to a better life. However, there are no records of any such doctor in Germany or Austria. Most likely she invented this suave and dashing and wealthy doctor. Mm. But to this day, we have no idea who the father of Anna's child actually was.
Oh.
But it didn't matter. Her family are utterly horrified by such a scandal to have a pregnant, unwed mother going around. No, not
for their little baby. No.
Terrible, terrible thing. And as soon as her son Oscar is born, Anna's parents swiftly arrange for her to be sent to America to stay with an aunt and uncle who live in Cincinnati.
Okay, that's far.
Out of sight, perhaps out of mind, the community, the neighbourhood will forget about this terrible stain on the honour of the family. Get rid of her, send her far, far away.
Well, send her far away when she's had the baby. Send her over there, it's not right, but send her over there surely while pregnant. So no one has to know. No.
After the baby. So off she goes. In 1929, she makes her way to the States, leaving poor Oscar in Bavaria with her parents. She settles into her new life in Ohio.
Wait, the kid was left with the parents?
The kid is left with the parents.
What? And then she's sent away?
And she is sent
away. This is weird logic.
Perhaps they pass the kid off as one of the other siblings' children, maybe.
The baby's fine, but she's shamed and she has to go to America. Okay, well,
yes, absolutely.
Okay, fair enough. Maybe, well, as you said, she's obviously had more problems than just having a baby.
Well, indeed.
An excuse to push her away.
Right. And she settles into her new life. And it's not long before she meets Philip Han at a very jolly community dance. And the two fall madly in love and they get married in 1930. So less than a year after she arrives and they've met, they marry. Now, Philip is well aware of Anna's son over in Bavaria. That's not news to him. She has told him that she was, in fact, married in Germany, but her husband passed away, and that's what caused her to move to the States. So she was, in fact, a widow.
Glamorous, sexy widow.
And such things are entirely acceptable.
There's no Facebook back then. You can't just go and stalk people.
No, well, exactly. He can't check these things out. He has to take her word
for it. Yeah, she can make up anything.
And why would you lie about such a thing?
For many, many reasons. Lying solves all of your problems.
Well, quite. After the wedding, they in fact make the trip back to Europe to meet the in-laws and to collect Oscar and bring him back to the US to live with Philip and Anna. Now, Philip works as a telegraph operator, a job he absolutely hates.
Oh.
And he cannot wait to get out and build a better life for him and his new family. And the couple save and they save and they save. And eventually they have enough money to start their own business. And they open two bakeries in Cincinnati, specializing in bringing a taste of home to all the German immigrants that are coming across from Europe.
Oh, nice.
They're making lots of sort of European German breads and pastries and things like that. A nice taste of home for these immigrants who are missing all these sorts of things.
Oh, yes. Lovely pastries. Oh, that's nice.
Absolutely.
I like that.
Delightful. Absolutely.
Isn't that everyone's dream? Open up a little cupcake shop.
Well, it certainly was Philip's. However, there's one thing that Anna has not bargained on. Her husband actually expects her to work. How very, very rude. Anna's expectations of staying home, looking after her son, but then going out and buying nice shiny things has not quite worked out. The bakeries are doing well, but it's not an easy life. It's a hard life running two bakeries.
You're
up early in the morning preparing all the bread and everything like that.
Bakeries, you have to get up at like 4 a.m.
It's an incredibly tough life.
And she's the one who knows all the taste of Europe, surely.
He is also a German immigrant.
Philip Hahn is also from
Germany. But he is the one in the bakery. She is the one on the shop counter, sort of doing the serving and perhaps some admin and all that sort of thing, keeping the books. And it is really not up her street, not what she was expecting at all. She finds it dreadfully boring. There must be a much, 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 much easier way of making money than this. Arson, that's easier.
What? I mean, she's just someone who doesn't like mornings.
Yeah, just someone who doesn't like working, really.
Yeah, I mean, you could just sit there. All she has to do is at the front and just take some money. But if she's getting up at 4 a.m. like, oh my God, this is so boring.
Yeah.
People, can I have a loaf of bread? Oh my God, what do you want from me, people? Why do they come to me?
And her husband's probably out the back there in the bakery, actually, making the stuff. She's got to then sort of grow all like the delivery boys who are taking stuff to other places and things like that. She's got to organise all that. A lot of admin and paperwork. And
no one has ever suffered as she has.
No one has ever suffered.
So her solution is fire.
Fire is obviously the best way out of all of this situation. But she starts with a small fire, a wee tiny fire.
A match.
At one of the bakeries.
Okay.
Now, it doesn't do too much damage, but still she gets $300 from the insurance company.
Mm.
Not too bad for a night's work.
Not too shabby.
No one suspects a thing. Got away with that one. Two further fires follow. These are both at the home that she's in fact inherited from her aunt and uncle that she went over to live with. They have since passed and left her a lovely, lovely house. Now, neither of these other fires did major sort of structural damage, but she is still able to collect over $2,000 from the insurance company.
Tasty.
Tasty, tasty sum of cash. So she's thinking, insurance fraud, this is the way forward. This is the way to go. And she starts looking around for other things that she can insure for lots of cash. And her eyes fall upon her dear beloved husband.
Swilling your cognac in your chair. Okay, that armoire, that could fetch a pretty penny. The credenza, that could be... Oh, hello, Philip. He's huge. All his body parts move. He must be worth millions.
Now, twice she attempts to persuade him to sign off on a $25,000 life insurance policy, but he outright refuses. Now, we don't know if perhaps he thought it was tempting fate. If he was, as many people did, it's almost slightly superstitious thing. If you always insure this, then sort of signing your own death warrant sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or even if the fact that he had some suspicions about his wife's motives, perhaps obviously knowing the fires that had happened previously.
Yes.
Is he maybe slightly dubious about what was going on? But either way, he refuses.
It feels like he is quite smart in this relationship, that several things have burnt down. She smells of smoke, is just flicking matches as she walks around the house, and then just turns up one day really close up into his face going, would you sign this life insurance policy? I'm totally sure you'll be fine.
Be fine. It'll all work out for the best.
Why have you brought this up now? No reason. whatsoever. Yeah, don't blame him for backing out of the room very slowly.
She is not at all happy by his refusal on this.
She burns more shit.
Quite frustrated. And shortly after, Philip falls seriously ill. And against Anna's wishes, he is rushed into hospital by his mother. His mother insists that he goes into hospital. Anna's there going, no, he's fine, he's fine, he'll be fine. The mother's going, no, he's going into hospital.
He needs some echinacea and some weak lemonade and dry toast, he'll be fine.
All will be well. He does, thankfully, recover from his mystery illness. But from this point on, Philip is entirely convinced that his wife does indeed have it in for him. And the distrust between the couple grows and grows and grows until eventually they go, no, can't be doing with this, and they actually separate. They go their separate ways. Philip has probably escaped, has had a lucky escape. But Anna is delighted. She is free from that damn bakery. None of that anymore. Don't have to be up at 4 in the morning taking in sacks of flour or delivering bread to people. Hurrah. But I do need some cash. For one thing, her gambling habit is starting to mount up a little bit.
Oh, she's a gambler now, is she?
Yeah, she's. It's not as easy as she thought to earn a living at the bookies. So she's starting to struggle slightly. So yeah, definitely needs to bring in some cash.
You mean she didn't have a system?
She did. Well, I think she did have a system. It wasn't a very good system.
Oh, she had two things. She had a system and a good feeling about things, which always works out.
Yeah, she had some lucky horse names. That's what she had, and it did not go well. The area Anna lived in Cincinnati was the heart of the German community, and she came to notice that there were an awful lot of elderly German men around who didn't really have any family or anyone to look after. These men had been part of the first wave of immigration to the US, and they had worked incredibly hard all their life to build up a little nest egg to keep them comfortable in old age.
Good for them.
Anna had encountered many of these men at the time at the bakery. They would come in for their loaves or their rolls or whatever it may be. And at the time, Anna thought they were nothing but a nuisance, but now they could be a gold mine. She takes up a very seemingly honourable position of a live-in nurse for these elderly men, and they would in fact welcome the company. It's nice to have someone else around. And also, they know Anna from her time at the bakery. They maybe even feel a bit sorry for her. She's a single woman now. Husband, in fact, has left her. She's got a young son to look after. So perhaps they feel a bit sorry for her, trying to help her out.
You can imagine that they've been coming into the bakery and trying to have... They're lonely and they just wanted some conversation after having the loaf of bread. And she's probably youngish and she's someone who's serving the bread, trying to chat. And she's like, oh, go away. And now she's playing the poor widow. And she comes out, oh, those poor old men. They just wanted some company.
Absolutely. I mean, she has absolutely no prior experience as a sort of caregiver. But she charms her way into these men's homes and soon initiates her very deadly plan.
Oh, God. It's astonishing at this time how little, zero qualifications were needed just to come in and go, absolutely. I will nurse you back to health. What are your qualifications? I have breasts. And I'm very good at the comforting with them. You are hired! Oh, God.
So her first job is with Ernst Koch, a widower in his 70s. Yes.
Sorry, we can't just gloss over the Ernest Koch there.
Oh, well, I was going to, because that's his name.
And she picked that one out first.
He had no prior medical issues. In fact, I mean, those who knew him described him as sprightly. But all this changes under Anna's tender and loving care. Now, we do not know if he ever noticed the missing valuables around his home. His dear wife's diamonds. A pawn to fiend Anna's gambling addiction.
Oh, that bitch. The diamonds! Diamonds!
Well, there we go. I was wondering if you were going to get that there.
This is where you slip it in there. But yeah, all the diamonds. Yeah. She took the diamonds to feed her habit. Ugh. And she is indeed a black diamond. Oh, I like it.
Indeed. But I mean, he is far too busy lying in bed, vomiting.
Oh, God.
Clutching his stomach. Horrendous diarrhea. I mean, he doesn't notice much of what's going on around him, really. He's in a bad way.
You're not going to be able to fight them off as well, you know. If someone's taking all your shit around you while that's going on, you could be protesting. They're like going, just say words if you don't mind me taking away this entire jewellery box. No, you seem fine. I'm out.
You're fine with it. Let's go with that. Now, unfortunately, Ernst Koch dies on May the 6th, 1933. Now, but though not before generously, very generously, changing his will and leaving his whole house to Anna.
Wow.
which is good going, really.
That's very convenient.
Yeah, but, and very generous.
Very generous and very kind to this person who has only literally come into his life in the last 5 minutes.
It's been like a month, 6 weeks or so. That she's been there.
Mm. She did a bang up job of curing him.
Well, she's not there to cure him. She's there to look after him in his old age.
Again, bang up job.
But well, yeah, she's doing really well at this.
So well.
From there, she goes to take care of Albert Parker, a retired railway worker. Albert was a kind man and agreed to loan Anna $1,000 for the care of poor dear Oscar, her son. And she signed an IOU saying, "Yes, I will repay your kindness as soon as possible."
I mean, that is as good as money.
When he dies, the IOU that Anna has signed, that Albert meticulously kept in his desk, conveniently vanishes, never to be seen again.
Or was it on disappearing ink?
What a surprise. What a surprise.
Yes, yes, yes.
Next, she sets her sights on Jacob Wagner. Jacob was 78 years old, and perhaps not quite as sharp as he had been in his youth. Anna persuaded the rather confused old man that she is in fact a long lost niece come all the way from the old country to help look after him in his dotage.
That's good.
He goes along with it. He goes, "Yes, absolutely, come on in. How are your parents? Haven't seen you in years."
We haven't had that yet. We haven't had people posing, just rocking up to an old man going, "I'm your niece.
Yeah.
Oh, you must come in. Come in, have some tea. Let me get this straight. Who are you again?"
Yeah.
"I am your great-grandniece. Your great-grandfather was a composer. It's fine. All of this is good. Where do you keep all of your jewels / money?
Where are the valuables?
My dear uncle."
Well, the cash ends up in her pocket, because when he dies 2 months later, he leaves his entire estate worth $17,000 to his beloved niece, Anna.
This is, oh my God, what? $17,000?
$17,000.
So I've got to assume...
Huge sums of cash.
So can we assume here with these people, they don't have any living relatives?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's something we'll come to in a minute. Give me 2 seconds and we'll come to that.
Oh, sorry, I'm jumping the gun here. I'm jumping the gun. But she's rocking up because it's the urban legend, isn't it? It's the idea that if you, I stumbled into this old man's funeral and I signed my name in the guest book and he left me £1 million because he said if anyone came to my funeral, I would leave them my fortune. So the idea of that these lonely old men, they just want someone to care for them and she's showing up on the doorstep. Very convenient. But they don't have any living relatives. Well,
absolutely.
Tell all.
She's incredibly careful with her crime. She always covers her tracks very well. And she selects her victims carefully, as we were just saying. They don't have families. Most of them are never married or are widowers. There's no one who's going to come questioning about if a will has changed. There's no one going to contest it. If someone dies unexpectedly, there's no one who's going to query it. They are generally men alone in the world sort of thing. And those are the people she focuses on.
There's no one who's going to come and question the will, saying, "I've got a claim to it."
Exactly.
It's so stupid. But yeah, there's no one who's going to have more of a claim than a distant relative.
Absolutely, yeah. And they seemingly have legitimate wills and something has been left to their dear Anna who's been caring for them. No one's going to question it. And I mean, also, as we have come across in many times before, old people die.
Shut up. No, you know, what?
If there's an easy explanation, no one is making a fuss about questioning it. Why? The doctor or the coroner did not look too far into the case. It just got signed and under the radar and dealt with.
Old people die. There happens to be a relative. And if that person is happily clearing up and being the executor and going, no, I'll take the body and I'll take care of all the paperwork, it's one less inconvenience, isn't it, for the state?
Absolutely. It's another case that while she was caring for a chap called George Gellersman, she makes off with $15,000 before his death in July 1937. So
she
is really raking in the cash. Though there is one case where she's perhaps not as careful as she has thought she had been, with a chap called George Heiss. I mean, maybe she's grown a bit too confident in her methods. One afternoon, George's new nurse, Anna, brings him a lovely mug of root beer. After Anna leaves the room, Heiss notices that a fly has perched on the side of the mug to take a drink from the beer.
Okay.
The fly promptly falls off the mug dead. George, slightly alarmed by this, development, calls Anna into the room, and she promptly tries to snatch the mug away from him, perhaps realizing that... Has she been rumbled?
By a fly. Things. That's always a good sign. Always dip a fly in your drink in the club to make sure that you're not being poisoned.
A tip for all here.
Carry a fly upon you.
She outright refuses to take a sip of the drink. As George is trying to say, well, you try it. You try this. She goes, no. George promptly and wisely dismisses Anna from his service.
Good for him.
Unfortunately, George never raises the alarm with the police and never tells anyone about this incident. And Anna is back out on the look for her next victim.
You've got to think, what has she been doing for these guys as well? Maybe as well as being a nurse, maybe there's been something a little bit close between them. And they don't want to raise that. They don't want to, if she's still alive and they're still alive and he's saying, oh, she tried to poison me. Well, she could say all sorts of allegations against him. Yeah. Well, maybe that's why he doesn't raise it.
Maybe. Yeah, that is indeed a possibility.
I'm writing down loads of notes on this. I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to crack this case.
So she's on the lookout for her next victim. She finds 67-year-old George Oberndorfer. Now, this perhaps is her most elaborate plan yet. In the summer of 1937, Anna convinces Oberndorfer that they should take a trip to Colorado Springs.
Lovely.
It's going to do him the world of good to get away from the city smog, the clean mountain air. It's going to be lovely and delightful. And
lovely.
George goes, yes, absolutely. Why the hell not? And George, Anna, and her son Oscar take the trip, and they check into the Park Hotel on the 30th of July that year. The following day, George is discovered unconscious in his hotel room and rushed into hospital. The doctors do all they can, but they are unable to diagnose this mystery illness that has apparently come on so swiftly and severely. And on the 1st of August, George dies at Memorial Hospital.
Ooh, bad trip.
Well, indeed, a very, very swift exit. Now, the hospital, obviously concerned by this sudden and unknown death, contact the local authorities and go, something weird's happening here. And they start to look into this unexplained death. They visit the hotel and discover that George was visiting from Cincinnati, and he's only checked in a few days before with a Mrs. Han and her young son. Now, Mrs. Han and the boy are nowhere to be found, and only George's luggage is found in the hotel room. Suspicions are further aroused as the police find that the owner of the hotel has just that morning filed a report about the theft of $300 worth of diamonds from another guest room.
Diamonds again?
More diamonds.
More diamonds? Oh, well, she made use of her stay.
Absolutely.
Didn't she made full use of the facilities
of
the
precisely,
hotel.
Precisely, absolutely so. Now, the police start searching the area for any sign of this missing woman or the missing diamonds. And in a nearby pawn shop, the owner tells them that a woman, accompanied by a young boy, had tried to pawn some jewels earlier that day. But he became suspicious at the woman's... She was in such a desperate hurry for the cash that he thought, no, something's not right yet, and he refuses to make the deal. And the description he gave matched the description of Anna Han given by the hotel staff perfectly.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, as they expand their search, they find that a woman had tried to withdraw $1,000 from a Denver bank using a Cincinnati bank book in the name of George Oberndorfer.
Oh, God, she's been busy.
So she's getting around the place. The woman had claimed to be Mrs. Oberndorfer, but she has no proof of ID or anything like that, just supposedly her husband's bank book. But the bank manager goes, no, none of this, and refuses to make the transaction.
Oh, that shows the desperation, isn't
Absolutely.
It? She's trying to cash stuff. She's trying to get as much money as she can as quickly as possible.
Precisely so. Now, while these investigations are going on, the hospital is conducting their own investigation on George's body, and during the autopsy.
That's called an autopsy.
Yeah, I got there in the end. I think a body investigation is much more exciting.
It's not that we're walking around with deerstalker hats on with pipes, poking the body with the pipe going, yes, it appears that he is dead. An investigation must be launched.
I think you find they were.
Dust him for prints.
They don't find prints, but what they do find is a massive dose of arsenic.
Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm! There it is!
There Woo! It is! Now, detectives are convinced that Anna is entirely responsible for George's death and the theft at the hotel.
The detectives in charge of the body investigation.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, those detectives.
Yeah, absolutely.
The body detectives, they are...
The body
detectives. They are convinced that she is most likely heading home to Ohio, to Cincinnati. And they contact the Cincinnati authorities, who are there, and they wait for Anna's return with arrest warrants in hand. Imagine about the train station going, oh, she's coming. Oh, she's a coming.
Wait, she's coming in the other one. Run!
Yes. Oh, there's two.
We forgot we had two train stations. They really did. They had to stand with the arrest warrant in hand.
Yeah. Got a bit of paper saying, I can arrest you.
I can arrest you. It says that literally scrawled in crayon.
Yeah. Signed by a judge. It's very official. When they eventually pick her up from whichever train station it may have been, they ask her about George. She responds, the man is a perfect stranger to me. Reminded that she has signed the hotel register with him, she changes her story and claims that, well, he was a Swiss gentleman and they had met on the train, and she said she felt sorry for him and she was only trying to help, so they thought they would split the cost of a hotel room just to help him along a bit.
What? That's a bad story.
It's a bad story. Again, the detectives point out that, well, we know he was from Cincinnati. So we've spoken to some neighbours and they've told us that you've been in the house a lot. you're a frequent visitor at George's.
Right.
Again, she comes out with a third story.
Good,
okay,
good.
Yes, she did know him, but it was entirely by chance that they met on the train going on holiday to the same place. Entire coincidence. Only once they discovered this happy coincidence did they then decide to split the cost of a hotel room, and it was all very coincidental.
Okay, when we're saying split the cost of a hotel room, is this some sort of euphemism that she was saying they shacked up together
most definitely, I think with George there was a shagging a plenty.
I think that she had that with his arrangement. Is she trying to say that to the authorities, saying, oh, we decided to split the cost of a hotel room to try and imply that there was some liaison there that she didn't want to really reveal? I mean, it's just stupid. It's just stupid, sorry.
It is just stupid, considering she's got her young son in tow as well.
Yeah. Throughout
this whole situation. So it's like, well,
there's many a time that I've taken a train journey and I've met someone and said, let's just split the cost of a hotel room together. No funny business.
You've met a Swiss gentleman in a carriage.
I long for the day.
Absolutely. And you say, well, twin bedrooms, twin beds.
Exactly.
We'll split the room, save a bit of cash. No shenanigans going on whatsoever. Up in the morning, go your separate ways. It often happens.
This is weird. Like, all the detectives are going, okay, we would think this weird if you hadn't killed him anyway. We'd still be going, were you having sex with this man?
You're
having sex with him, and then you killed him. You don't need to do this elaborate ruse, honestly.
Now, despite her excellent
lies,
alibis that she's got going on, the detectives are indeed able to get a search warrant for Anna's home. One detective comments that they found enough poison to kill half of Cincinnati.
What?
Just lying around.
Just one grain of strychnine.
They also discover the IOU written out to Albert Parker for $1,000 that she has signed. Now, why the fuck she would keep such a thing, I do not know.
She's clearly an idiot.
Well, there is that. Yeah. As they dug further into Anna's past, they find out about all the inheritances that have been left to her by so many of her old patients. Details start to appear in the local papers about these newly suspicious deaths. One of these articles reaches the hand of George Heiss, the chap who was saved by the fly, and he realises what a close call that he had and contacts the police to tell his story at that point.
George and the fly have shacked up together. They have actually married.
The fly is dead. The fly is long dead.
He resuscitated it after she left.
Okay. Lovingly. You saved my life.
You saved my life. Now my life is yours. I owe my life. He's spent the rest of his life dedicated to saving flies wherever they go.
It was a delightful time. In the apartment building of Jacob Wagner, the man who left everything to his beloved niece, they found Olive Luella Kohler. Olive remembered Anna quite well. They had been great friends when she had been visiting with Jacob, though she did remember an occasion where Anna had bought her an ice cream cone and that she had become so ill after eating it that she had been taken into hospital. And it just so happens that during that hospital stay, someone broke into her apartment and stole all her diamond jewellery.
Oh, good God.
And for some reason, Olive hadn't put all these things together until that point.
Well, you wouldn't, would you? Someone's bought you an ice cream cone. No. You're just really grateful someone's bought you ice cream.
And someone you know and someone you trust and you've seen a lot around the building. Now, investigators are now entirely convinced that Anna has been poisoning her elderly patients and been doing it for many, many years. And they are able to arrange the exhumations of George Gellersman and Jacob Wagner on this evidence. Now, during the autopsy of Gellersman, they discover a poison that they initially thought to be arsenic. But on further testing, they discover it to be croton oil.
What?
A new poison that we have not had before,
we
so that's exciting.
We haven't covered croton oil. Sounds
croton
amazing.
Oil.
Croton oil. That sounds like something that repels Superman and also powers cars. So deadly. Deadly, if anything. Croton oil. Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited to hear about it.
Croton oil is extracted from the croton tree that is native to India.
Oh.
It is taken from the seeds of the tree. In small doses, it was used to treat constipation.
Oh.
As it tended to loosen things. Mm-hmm. However, in large doses, it causes burning in the mouth, throat, stomach, much vomiting of blood, diarrhea, including lots of blood as
including
well.
Including the intestines.
Including most of the bodily organs going out. And it leads to a desperately unpleasant death.
Oh, goodness.
During the Second World War, the US Navy added croton oil to torpedo fuel to stop sailors drinking the fuel.
Okay, that's a lot to unpack.
Because the fuel was sort of ethanol-based, yeah, in a sort of alcohol way. And they thought, to make this unpalatable to sailors, we will add the croton oil to make it that unpleasant.
So you'll shit yourself to death if you drink this. Hopefully ethanol is not going to be a pleasant drink as it is.
Well, a bit of lime, it's grand. So it's unpleasant stuff, but has many uses, especially in torpedoes. Now, a pharmacist later confirms that Anna has indeed purchased croton oil on the 20th of July, 1936. He has it all written down in his very nice book.
For all her torpedo plans.
She is well prepared. In the case of Jacob Wagner, they find good old-fashioned arsenic.
Yes.
It's not as exciting, but it's a classic. Anna is arrested for the murder of Jacob Wagner on the 10th of August 1937. Despite the overwhelming evidence of multiple murders, the authorities decided to go one at a time. If this one didn't stick, they'll try with the next one. If that one didn't stick, they'll try with the one after that. And each one in turn until they got her. The trial starts on the 11th of October in front of a jury of 11 women and one man, which is a curious
interesting
split. Now, the prosecution unleash a barrage of witnesses, hospital employees who testified to Wagner's last agonizing days, chemists who confirmed that he had enough arsenic in his system to kill four grown men, a handwriting expert who tells the court that Wagner's will is a forgery and the writing is identical to Anna's. The judge even allows the other murders to be shown as evidence, evidence of a pattern of homicidal behavior.
Okay.
I mean, even though she's not on trial or convicted of any of the others,
you're not supposed to bring that into it. You're not supposed to have any past convictions or any other cases that are active. You have to be tried only on that case that's in hand.
The judge goes for it and says, yeah, bring it on. Absolutely.
Yeah. Look at all the other shit she did.
Exactly. The more the better. Now, the defense has nothing in rebuttal. And all they have is Anna on the stand going, no, it wasn't me. I didn't do it.
They've opened up their briefcase going, well, I think you'll find it in the briefcase. There's just one sheet of paper and an apple. And on the sheet of paper is written, just lie.
Yeah. In his closing arguments, the prosecutor lets rip, describing Anna as the coldest, most heartless, cruel person that has ever come within the scope of our lives. He has a very dramatic flair, which I very much approve of, I have to say. And he says, in the four corners of this courtroom stand four dead men, Gellersman, Palmer, Wagner, and Obendorfer. From the four corners, bony fingers point at her and say, that woman poisoned me. That woman made my last moments an agony. That woman tortured me with the tortures of the damned. Which is excellent. I love it.
Excellent. Just throws the paper in the air, saunters back to his chair very quietly, sits down, defense stands up, shuffling blank pages.
You can imagine that he's got like a whole tech team behind him. There's somewhere there with some dry ice, throwing that in as well. Really get the mood going.
Oh yeah, he's got like spotlights that come on like boom, 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 boom in all four corners.
It's great. It's great. It looks really good.
And then he ruins it at the end with a glitter cannon or something like that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you can never ruin anything with a glitter cannon.
Boom.
The jury take 2 hours to decide her guilt. I think mainly that was sandwich
based. 1 hour, 59 minutes. Sandwiches. 1 minute, she guilty.
And come back with a verdict of guilty with no recommendation for mercy. Now, without this recommendation, the judge is left with only one option.
Death.
Anna Marie Hahn was to be the first woman executed in the state of Ohio.
Oh, in the state of Ohio.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, not in the world ever.
I wasn't going to say that. No, we very much know that wasn't the case.
First woman ever to be executed in the state of Ohio. She is transferred to Ohio State Penitentiary while her lawyers keep up the appeals.
Based on what?
Well, based on going, well, no, that's not right. It all comes to nothing.
Our glitter cannon didn't go off. It's not fair.
We only had 3 spotlights. They had 4. It's not fair. On Tuesday, the 6th of December, 1938, Ohio Governor Martin Davey makes a statement refusing to interfere with the decision of the courts. Anna's execution is sentenced for 8 p.m. the next day. She spends much of the next day writing 4 letters that were handed to her lawyers before she is marched to the electric chair. She is pronounced dead at 8:13 p.m.
Oh, she really does go to the chair. Okay.
She goes to the chair. She goes to the chair. And in some accounts, there are actually quite vivid details of her on the chair, which I decided to issue. They're out there if you want to see them, but it's quite...
Go look them up if you want to.
Go look if you really want to, but they're out there. She does, indeed. She is indeed executed. In the following days, her lawyers announce that the letters that she has written before her death have been sold to the Cincinnati Inquirer.
No!
Yeah, well, no, under her express wishes, okay. that was the case. And the money is to be used to help her son.
Oh, Oscar.
The profits from this go to dear Oscar.
Oh, God.
Oscar is, in fact, placed with a foster family far away from Ohio. But true to their word, the newspaper pays for his education and never reveal his new name or his whereabouts at all.
No.
And he is left entirely out of the way and out of sight.
Wow.
Over 4 days, the newspapers publish Anna's full confession. And these letters are available online should anyone wish to read them. But they are desperately sad, telling of a woman who knows she has done terrible things, but just doesn't understand why or how she was capable of them. And I'm going to read you an excerpt from her last letter.
Okay.
And then I will cry.
Do we need to brace ourselves here? Oh, I drank all my drinks. Okay, all right. I'll clutch the glass in a pious manner.
I don't know, you'll laugh maniacally all the way through.
Jesus! Okay.
There were times in the courtroom, the times that the newspaper wrote, that I seemed to be worried, that I was just about to cry out. I was just about ready to cry out. I could hardly keep my secret in me. It seemed that I would have to cry out. I wanted to cry that they were trying the other Anna Han and not this one sitting in the courtroom. Somehow I kept the secret. I hope that God will take care of my son, for I would not want anything to happen to my boy. I feel that God has shown me my wrongs in life, and my only regret is that I have not the power to undo the trouble and heartache that I have caused.
No.
Not tugging at your strings.
No, I don't buy it. Yes, maybe you can reform and maybe you can have a change of ways and you can look back on the stuff that you've done with great regret and go, my God, what kind of frame of mind have I been in? Usually that's if you've done something a little bit bad once in your life. If you've repeatedly killed people and then planned their deaths. No sympathy there. No sympathy. Own up to it.
And which you did. She did indeed.
Yeah, but she owned up saying it was another person. It was another version of her.
No, okay, well, perhaps I've chosen the wrong excerpt. The letters. I may have mischosen my quotes.
Well, maybe.
But she does indeed. She very much confesses. If you read, I read them all and they were quite sad. But she does indeed confess that, yes, I did all these things and it is a terrible thing that I have done. And she does entirely own up to it and admit what she has done.
That's fair enough, I suppose, yeah. Really, if you've read all the confessions.
Yeah, I mean, there was no doubt that she killed, yeah, at least 4. There were potential, one account I read, that she was suspected of up to 13.
God.
I think it was only in one account that they had a number that high, but it was definitely at least 4, 4 that she confessed to in her letters, but people suspect potentially more.
Wow.
So there's the sad and terrifying case of Anna Marie Han.
Anna Marie Han, da da da, famous case. What a story! is it a sad case?
I don't know. I'm in 2 minds. When I read some of her letters, I was actually surprisingly moved by what she had written, where she said, "Yeah, absolutely, it was me, and I'm really sorry for what I've done. It's terrible. I don't know why I did it, but I did it. And then her main concern seems to be for the welfare of her son.
And credit to you, you know. That's... I mean, everyone is able to reform and everyone, you know, if you're on your deathbed, yes, you're going to be ushered along to thinking, wow, I really need to make amends here. I can empathise with that. I remember seeing a documentary about people who were on death row in America very recently. And there was one account from one prisoner who was talking to his parole board, knowing that he was going to go, and he was saying, I should be put to death. And he was very passionately talking about how he was responsible and acknowledging what he had done. He had found God, and that was what had helped him along. And I remember watching that and being so moved by someone going really vehemently, I am responsible. I must take responsibility for what I have done.
Yeah.
Maybe to the parents of the people he had killed, they wouldn't be so sympathetic, maybe.
Well, absolutely, yeah, indeed. I think for people who are so closely involved, you'd be going, I don't give a fuck what you said. You killed X, Y, and Z. That's...
I think it's good that she did repent at the end and that she did really try to confess and try to find a way to protect my son and give him some money. Because, well, you get desperate, but you probably shouldn't have killed all those fucking people, frankly.
I mean, absolutely, yeah. I mean, no matter what she wrote at the end and things like that, that still remains that she killed at least four people.
Yeah.
And there is no excusing that, whatever the situation.
Maybe I'm being really harsh in judging it because we've had loads of terrible killers on our hands and we've laughed and we've joked about it. And maybe it's years of, I don't know, reporting on some crimes as well when I was a journalist. But it's very, very easy to be sad when you've been caught and to be repentant when you're about to go to jail and go, oh, no, I'm really sad about it. But you weren't putting that message out in trial, were you? You weren't saying, I confessed, I'm not going to waste the state's time when there's nothing else left. Oh, yeah, actually, I did it all.
I mean, then you think about it, was there any reason for her to write those letters? What's the whole thing? Desperately cynical, and it's a way to get some cash.
For her son? Yeah, if she genuinely seemed to care about her son, then get him some cash.
I know this is what's going to happen. I'm going to die tomorrow. So what is the best way that I can look after my son and get him some money? Yeah, I'll write these things down. No one's going to pay for a thing going, I fucking didn't do it. No one's going to pay for that.
Yeah, very cynical
now,
aren't we? That's
very cynical. That's an incredibly cynical way of looking at it, which is possible.
It's possible. And our listeners are real true crime fans. You guys out there probably listen to far more podcasts and know so many cases, even beyond our ken as well. What do you think about, you know, we're getting into the media actually around some of these cases. What do you think about this? Do you think that she was being cynical at the end? Maybe there are other cases that you want to cite precedent on. So we've got people who have suddenly confessed right at the end. Is it cynical or is it really a moment where they're trying to claw back some humanity? That's the dark side of this. But still, what a killer. I mean, she was ballsy. She was ballsy and rocked up to the house. I'm a nurse. Qualifications? None. Okay, come in.
Did I say nurse? I meant your great niece.
What am I? Nurse? Niece? Nurse? Niece? I have a stutter. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm German. The accent makes it all sound the same.
You're German too, am I? Yes, you're senile. Go with me on this. Oh, I know. And I did write down again, this is sad. Again, I feel a bit sad saying this, but yeah, all those old fellas who, as we said, came into the bakery and saw her. If she had gotten them to change their will, was it a bit of they genuinely wanted to give her the money, or were they just a bit of, you know what, someone may as well have it. I know she's trying to kill me. I know she's being horrible. Fine, take what you want and I'll go. And just feeling that despondent at the end. That's a very bleak way of putting it.
That's incredibly bleak.
I think it's sort of a little bit of alluding to some classic novels I've read, actually, where it's like, oh, God, that's horrible. Oh, but those poor lonely men. Leave the men alone. They just wanted their bread. They just wanted their baguettes.
Yeah. Well, now we're all thoroughly depressed.
I know, yeah.
Thanks for that.
It's a really, really good story. And yeah, the balls of her getting diamonds from everyone. While I'm killing someone in this hotel, may as well raid another room.
May as well find some diamonds.
Exactly. Make the most of it. I think that's it. But that's why I think she was cynical at the end. She exploited every opportunity that she could.
This is very true.
God damn
that's
it.
Very true.
Well, enough of us talking about it. What do you think, people? Please weigh in with your thoughts on this. We've gotten into a nice little hot debate about, you know, deathbed or death row confessions. So what do you think? Do you think she was really repentant at the end? Do you think she was completely mercenary throughout? Do you feel sad for her? Do you know the case? Do you know more of the stories have you read the letters that Nick has alluded to? Would you steal someone's diamonds if the opportunity arose? They're very, very sparkly.
Yeah, who wouldn't?
Yeah.
Go for the sparkly thing.
If you're committing a crime, do you tack on another crime at the same time just to get some jewellery?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're there already, so...
Do people think that? Like, I've killed this person. Well, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Well, suppose, I think if you killed someone, then fuck yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. This is very much the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to get worse than this. So if I take something sparkly, then...
You're caught stealing after there's a dead body in your room. And you're like, oh, the stealing. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, don't, obviously, people.
Yeah, well,
we're not advocating.
Don't
do something and then do a bigger crime to cover the smaller crime that you've just committed. Just don't commit any crimes.
But what you should do is make some lovely, lovely cocktail. Make some, instead of stealing some diamonds, make a diamond, black diamond cocktail. And let us know what you think. The recipe will be out on Friday and it'll be delightful for all.
These are the bad decisions we can get on board with. And escalate them by all means. While you're there, make that other bad decision. No one will judge you because the cocktails cover everything. And if you haven't already, make sure you come and join us on Patreon for $5 a month or the equivalent currency wherever you are. Come and talk to us if you would like to have any information about Patreon. There are new episodes every week. We're putting out some new bonus content very soon. We have got lots on there and lots more to come from your favourite podcast because we are your favourites.
Absolutely. How can we not be?
Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Oh.